Every day's Friday with the Good Morning Team.
Good morning.
We'll keep you smiling and in the know. Your great good morning radio is WOWO.
Well, one of the interviews here at thehistoryofwowo.com that I really have been looking forward to is this one. It's a guy that has certainly been a mentor of mine, Dugan Fry. Dugan, welcome, and we're glad you're here.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and I'll tell you what, after that talent you've had on thus far, it's going to be tough to go from here on out.
Well, you have such a unique perspective on WOWO because you did so many different things there. You started out as a newsman, and then you were the news director, and a little later on, you took on the challenge of replacing Jay Gould, who, of course, was a legend, and then you left the station for a while, and you took even on a bigger challenge of replacing Bob Sievers.
Well, it was a real simple formula to that, you see. They figured if they gave me enough chances, I might be able to do something well.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I want to cover a lot of ground here, but first of all, what year did you come to WOWO? I'm sure you remember that, but do you remember the story of how you came to WOWO?
I sure do. 1967. I was working at WFOB, which was Fostoria, Bowling Green, Ohio. I was doing Bowling Green State football and basketball and just a little bit of everything over there, mm-hmm. and in news. And back then, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have all of these sources. Most everybody, if you were looking for a job, you looked at Broadcasting Magazine.
Yeah.
And there were only two places, really, that I was very happy in smaller radio. There was a station in Columbus, Ohio, and then, of course, WOWO, and everybody wanted to go to WOWO. A job came open. I applied for it. A terrific news director by the name of Abe Albright must have had the flu or something because he saw something in me when I first came, and he offered me a job, and away we go.
So then you were there for several years and became news director.
Yes. I don't recall how many, three or four. Abe left and went to KDKA. And then Bill Hartnett was after him, and I think Glenn Richards, and Glenn went to KDKA, and they said, hey, we need a news director, and we're running out of guys, and they said, hey, you. And Mr. Vandegrift called me in, and away that started.
Tell me a little bit about the news department. The WOWO news department at that time was just really strong.
It really was, and boy, we were proud of that. We had, one of the things I like to tell people, we had more news people than the TV stations did at that point.
That's amazing.
But everybody was an editor and also on the air, and it was just a well-working machine. Oh, we had people that, and I'm thinking right away off the top of my head, Art Salzberg. Art was just fantastic, a real pro. We had people like, I'll mention some names, Doug Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
Art and Doug started something, we called it Newsday. It was a 30-minute newscast, which doesn't sound like much to people, perhaps, but they did it all. They did the sourcing, they wrote it, they edited it. They did the show on the air, and both did just a great job. It was an award-winning newscast. You know the story about Art. He's been a pro ever since then. And Doug Fisher went on to have a really good career with Associated Press, and now he's an instructor of journalism at the University of South Carolina. We had folks like Jim Edwards, really briefly, who went on to WJR, Jim Scott, young man that went to ABC Radio, Jim Schweikert, I think he had his own voiceover business, Jerry Hoffman. He was called the voice to end all voices. I mean, if they ever typecast somebody to, you know, have that big booming voice from heaven, it was Jerry Hoffman.
Yeah, he sounded like a network newsman, no question.
He really did, and he had a sort of a side to him where he liked to kid around a lot, too. You know, people didn't realize that. I thought he was very serious. He used to give Bob Sievers fits.
I can tell from personal experience, Jerry used to try to break everybody up on the air.
We had a deal where we did the half-hour update, and then we would throw it back to the personality so that they could do the outtag or the new sponsorship. Everything that they used to kid, anything that moved was sponsored. You know? No, they were thinking of sponsoring the national anthem, but we never signed off, so they couldn't do it. But anyway, he would throw things back to Bob, and Bob used to tell me, he said, oh, Dugan, he's killing me. If Bob got, would somebody break him up, this went back to the old days, he'd pinch himself on the leg so he wouldn't laugh.
Yeah.
Because in the way back, you couldn't do that. But you, if you laughed, you were in trouble. And he'd grab himself by the thigh and start pinching. And he said, Jerry Hoffman's making me black and blue. One thing that I recalled one day, he said, oh, Bob, this final story. And Bob, of course, had been in the Navy. He said, I see the story here. They had to stop a Senate hearing. They were going to interview an admiral, but he couldn't come in because he had to have emergency hemorrhoid surgery. And that was bad enough. And he said, oh, by the way, Bob, he was a rear admiral. Bob had to come in and take it over from there. And another very legitimate news story, the planet Uranus.
Yeah.
They pronounce it Uranus at that point. I think they've changed it.
Yeah.
And his last line on that one, and I swear to goodness, this is what it was. He said, oh, and by the way, Bob, he said, scientists confirmed today they've discovered rings around Uranus. It was up to Bob from there, you know. And Stever said, he's killing me. So I would get called into the program manager's office, and they would say to me, this guy's got to use more discretion, you know. And I'd say, okay, I'll talk to him. And it was good till the next time.
You know, one thing I want to ask you, who was the first woman in the WoWo News
Very
Department?
Good. I'm glad you asked me that. We had trouble getting her on the air simply because you got to think, and I don't want to sound chauvinistic, but this was back in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. and you didn't have women anchors. I mean, they had some reporters, but for some reason, they just didn't happen. So Al Mitchell helped me to convince the powers that be to put Rosemary Haddad, a terrific lady, and she may have been the first anchor in Group W, and if not, it was Andrea Mitchell at KYW. She was so good, and Linda Loesch Busker, boy, was I proud of her. She came in as an intern and then developed into a really terrific news person. And there were many others. I hope I haven't forgotten. Jay Johnson was a good one. There were just a lot of folks who were so good, and a lot of our guys moved on to other places. I want to get on some other things if I could. I don't mean to slight the news department, but I got a Bodie story for you, too.
Okay, go ahead. Lay it on me.
Oh, man. We did a program on Sunday, half-hour interview program called Summit Conference.
Yeah.
For the Summit City. Boy, were we original, you know. Nonetheless, Stu Dan, who was one of our news persons, I don't want to forget him because he was great. He was going to interview one of our senators, and I can't recall which senator it was, but he came in after most of the folks, and we had about 50-some people working in the building at that point. They had all gone home, primarily. There were just a few people around. So Stu wanted to introduce them to the senator. He thought that would be a nice thing to do. And he did, and then gone back the hallway, here was Bodie in his cut-off blue jeans, in his broom and his mop, and his white T-shirt that he always wore. I think it was a tank top. But anyway, he's working, and Stu says, hey, Bodie, come here. I want you to meet the senator. And Bodie never skipped a beat, not facing him, just threw his hand up, and he said, ah, they're all alike. And I told Stu, I said, my goodness, weren't you embarrassed? He said, I sure was, but he said, the senator took it in stride. He said, after a long, hard campaign day, I needed that. Said, that's one of my Bodie stories.
Bodie was one of a kind, that's for sure.
Oh, my. And it goes back to, I got stories because I was there so long from all of the folks.
Yeah.
Bob Stevers told me one time about he and Jay. This is back before tape recording, even wire recording. They used to do their interviews on transcriptions.
Right, which were like almost like vinyl records.
Big old things.
Right.
Probably, what, 18 inches wide?
Yeah.
And if you made a mistake back then, you couldn't turn off the tape recorder and go back and cover it. But there was a way, there was a little knife-like thing that you could take the groove, and if you knew how to cut it just right, it would skip right over, and you had a little burp, but, you know, what mm-hmm. the heck, there was no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the county agents was telling Jay how to deal with honeycombs when you take them apart.
Yeah.
And he made a statement that it wasn't bad, but you couldn't use it on the air back then. So Jay said, no problem, I'll take it out. He just skipped it. Well, thing was playing. It was about 8 minutes long in the old building, and Bob had to go, as he said, to the little boys' room, and Jay was getting coffee right outside, and this thing was playing, and it got to that point, and this agent said, now, Jay, you got to be very careful when you do this, because if you don't, it'll be a hell of a mess, a hell of a mess, a hell of a mess, and the thing got stuck, and then Bob went on to describe how he and Jay ran over each other trying to get back to the studio to get that thing off. Oh, my. There's so many. Jack Underwood, what a great guy. We called him, well, everybody called him the Silver Fox.
Yeah.
So smooth. I'd be remiss if I didn't say something about Sam DeVincent.
Sam DeVincent, we could do an interview just about Sam, because he was certainly a character, if nothing else, but he was one of a kind.
He had so many one-liners. He'd drop them in all the time. And this one day, we were recording the Sunday Little Red Barn. We always did that, I think, on a Friday.
Yeah.
And he had just gone on with, 14 or 15 of them that day. And it got to the point where I said, whew, and it so happened, Sam was in his office, and thanks to Larry Kenny, most of the policemen thought I worked 7 days a week. But anyway, one of the policemen that I was working with, it might have even been Ron Buskirk, I'm not sure, brought a press release up for the Police Athletic League. I worked with that. Both my boys played football in that program. And anyway, he had this piece of paper, and Sam didn't know what it was, and I told the officer, I said, hey, play along with me. He said, okay. So I said, Sam, I said, this officer's here to see you. He said, what? I said, yeah, he has a warrant for your arrest. And Sam said, what? I said, yeah, it charges you with the death of vaudeville. But that day, he had used lines like he said, he had a friend who was in the hospital, and he knew he was getting better because he took a turn for the nurse. And Nancy, of course, his wife, wonderful lady, did the show with us. And he said, he woke up that morning, and he said it was a beautiful day, and he stretched, and he said, oh, boy, Nancy, he says, I feel like a new man. And Nancy said, so do I. I told Nancy, I've talked with her on several occasions after Sam's passing, and I said, rest assured that as long as I'm alive, Sam's jokes will never die because I use them till this day. I wanted to say a little something about another. We had so many mentors. You mentioned that earlier, but when I went there, we all did in our own niche there.
Mm-hmm.
And people that just took us under their wing. Bob Chase was another. What a story that guy is. Still doing, I understand, common hockey.
Yeah, 57 years.
And the thing about it is, there are a lot of announcers that keep going, but they don't do it well.
Right, right.
But Bob Chase, from everything I understand, does it the same way he did at the beginning.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. He is timeless.
He and I one time were down at the Indy 500 time trials. We used to cover him for Group W and WoWo.
Mm-hmm.
And a racer, his name was in the news recently, Lloyd Ruby. He just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He should have won the Indy 500 that particular year, I think. Now, this was the time trials preceding it. As he's pulling out of his pits, the hose nozzle got stuck, and he was leading by a big margin, and he didn't win it. The story I wanted to tell you, Bob and I are walking down Gasoline Alley, the old Gasoline Alley, and Lloyd Ruby steps out of his garage, and he sees us with the WoWo hats and everything, and he starts singing the WoWo jingle and dancing a little jig. It just shows you how everybody knew WoWo.
Many years later, I covered the Indy 500, and it was the same reaction there then. People recognized WoWo in Indianapolis like it was a local station.
Oh, really? Yeah. The guys I heard you talk to thus far have all said about how it was not only a station to work, but friendships. And how people cared for each other.
Mm-hmm.
This business, and for folks who don't know, there's a lot of egos in this business. But there, we really didn't have the egos. Competition, yeah, but not egos. The guys were all pulling for each other, feeding each other information, and, you know, happy when we all did well.
I wanted to ask you if you had any air races stories. I know you have the distinction of probably having the most broken bones on the team.
Right? Well, that's true, because I had run track and played a little basketball. Ran track in college, never had an injury, you know, that would ever stop me from doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And during the years with the air races, I broke my elbow and I broke my wrist.
Mm.
And so they finally kicked me off. They said Workman's Comp is going to, you know, raise our rates to the point we can't do it anymore. Yeah, I broke my wrist during a practice one time. Dan Friel, what a great guy, is one of our general managers he was. He had the task, you talk about me, I always told people, you don't replace Bob Sievers. They said, you're the guy replaced. No. You tried to follow in his footsteps because there was no replacing Bob Sievers. I mean, it just didn't happen. And Dan Friel had the same situation in replacing Warren Maurer, who was just a fantastic general manager, and obviously his history with Westinghouse proves that.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Friel had been the general sales manager and then came in to replace him and never missed a beat. But Dan Friel, at home, had to come in and drive my old truck that I had at that point. Because they took me to Lutheran Hospital, I had to spend a night with a broken wrist. I didn't realize when they shatter, it's a little something different. So Dan had to go and take my truck home and tell Sharon what happened to me, you know, because at that point, they had just taken me right to the hospital, and no one had a chance to call her. You didn't have cell phones and all of that, any car phones back then.
Mm-hmm.
So Dan Friel comes pulling him on my house, and Sharon thinks, so Doug's home after the practice, and Dan Friel gets out of my truck. Now what happened? Anyway, I want to give credits and kudos to Dan because he was a tremendous general manager, as was Vanny before him and Warren Maurer. And those were the three persons in Westinghouse that I dealt with. All great.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about when you took over as WoWo Farm Services Director, because that was probably pretty intimidating to be asked to replace Jay Gould.
Tremendously intimidating. But again, in WoWo and Westinghouse wisdom, they did things right. I had been kind of Jay's assistant. I had a bit of a farming background, not certainly as much as he, but I had basic knowledge of it. They had me go with Jay for months and months and months, in fact, maybe even years, as this transition was going to take place. And I got to know the agents, which was really key, because those county agents were, they kind of dismantled that program now, but they were the closest thing that the farming community had to a lot of the innovations. You didn't have the computers again. You couldn't get on there and look, research things.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was... It was intimidating, I never said I had a lot of sense to try to replace Jay Gould and Bob Sievers, you know. Wow.
Now, before we move on to replacing Bob, do you have any Jay Gould stories that you would like to share?
Well, there are many. One that stands out particular to me, there was a farm broadcasters meeting, and our good friend, the late Wayne Rothgib from Channel 33, hosted this thing for farm directors all over the country, and it was there, one of the, maybe at the Marriott, I'm not sure. But in front of this whole thing, Bob Sievers emceed it, and we all know Bob could never say no to anybody, you know. He was just, if you needed something, he would give it to him. And so Jay got his lick in on him a little bit because he stood up in front of all these people and he says, I want to introduce you to my partner for you out of the market that don't know him. Went on and on and on and told about the benevolent things he had done and how if somebody needed a buck, he gave it to him. One guy showed up at the studio on a Saturday morning and I was doing news and Bob and Jay were on the air. And I think that guy came every week for probably 3 months.
Wow.
And Bob would give him $5. No questions asked, you know. And Jay kept telling him, man, that guy's going to go buy cigarettes or whatever. No, 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 he's going to go eat. So anyway, Jay introduced Bob, and he said, Bob, before I bring you up here, he said, there's one thing I've been wanting to say to you for years. He said, when you go to bed at night, you ought to get on your knees and thank the Lord that you're not a woman.
Because Bob could never say no to anyone.
And no questions asked, you know. Sievers was something. It's so hard. People here ask me, what can you tell me about this guy? I mean, we have folks down here that used to listen. A lot of transplanted Indiana and Michigan and Ohio people, especially in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Was Bob Sievers really like he sounded? And I said, yeah, he was. I mean, that was Bob. You talked about the Larry Kenny and Dale Ulmer lemonade stand?
Yeah.
My boys, Dugan and Gary, got one of those kits, and they set it up out in front of our house. And we lived on a little cul-de-sac. Hardly anybody came back there. So they weren't making any money, and I told Bob about that. So when he got off work that day, he drove out in his convertible with a top down in the summer and the air conditioning on, pulled up there, and I didn't even know this had happened because I was still working. Bought a cup or two of lemonade for my boys and then said, here, I don't have any change. Take this, and gave him $20.
Wow. That sounds exactly like Bob.
That's him. And when you say replacing, that's why I say you can't replace him.
Yep.
There's no way.
When you were Farm Services Director, you left then in what year?
I stopped to think. I was there from 67 to 81, and then in 81 I left and came down here. A gentleman over in Longboat Key wanted to start a radio station here in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came down and helped him, and we put that station on the air. It's still going strong. I'm not associated with it in any regard, but it's still going very strong. And about 2 years into that, I got a call from Bill Latz, who was the general manager under Price Broadcasting, and said, would you have any desire whatsoever to come back and replace Bob? And I thought, whoa. So I thought it over, and Sharon and I talked about it. The station was doing okay, this one here, and it was on its feet. So I said, yeah, you know, and that'd be very interesting. So one thing led to another, and there I was. Everybody's got to be someplace.
I guess so. You know, a lot of people would be afraid of that challenge.
Well, it was. I wasn't afraid of it. I was concerned, I guess is the best word to use. And Bill told me that, and this meant a lot to me, so they had done some survey. I'd been gone for 2 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired somebody to do a survey about name recognition. As I understand it, they were thinking of possible people to replace.
Right.
So they went on and asked, and according to Bill, now I have no idea about this, said that my name had come up second only to Bob in recognizability, and I'd been gone for 2 years.
Wow.
But simply, again, you're there long enough, people are going to remember you. You know, it's like a bad teacher you had. You remember them. That's what happened, and I did it, and I'm so happy I did. And at the time, I said, look, I love Florida. I want to be back there. So I had a 5-year contract, and at the end of 5 years, and it was, we came in at a, when I say we, all of us, it was a rough time. I mean, in the, first of all, replacing a legend, which you can't do. Secondly, that's when FM was really overtaking AM.
Yes.
It was rough. Chris Roberts and I did the show together then for quite a while, and boy, that was a pleasure. Working with him. That was really a pleasure. But to make a long story short, we planned on coming back, and at the end of 5.5 years, we came back down and been very happy. Chris Roberts, I got to mention him. He's a friend of yours, I know, too. Chris was not flamboyant. I always called him Mr. Steady. Smooth. It's like a finely tuned car. You could go in the garage and turn it on, and it's going to go.
Yep.
Whatever he had to do, he did it. He told me a story about Ron Gregory that I love. Ron's wit, so quick. I don't have the talent that Ron and Larry have, but my wit is like that, and sometimes too quick. in the fact you sometimes say things and you wish you hadn't. They come out too quickly. Chris was telling me that Ron and he were going somewhere in Fort Wayne on Parnell, and there was a minor accident they saw. And that was back when Renault had a little car called Le Car.
Yeah.
You recall that?
Yeah.
Well, it had hit a Chevy, an older Chevy, and the Chevy maybe had one little dent, and Le Car was demolished. It was sitting there smoking, and they're driving by, and he said, Ron looks over, and he says, Le Car, Le Accident. And on they go. It may not be funny to some people, but that's hilarious to me. We had a photo printing company in they may still be in business, very reputable, so I won't mention the name, but they were having a little trouble with their photo printing. You know, you take the billfold things in and get them printed.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they had a little glitch, and Ron apparently wasn't aware of this, and he was doing a commercial for him one night, and he said he knew a lady that had a little trouble in getting her prints back from there, and as she drove by, she started singing, Someday My Prints Will Come. Which, that's off the top of his head.
That's a Ron Gregory joke, absolutely.
Tremendously funny. And the sponsor didn't think so. Ron got admonished for that one, but that wasn't the first time, probably not the last.
Earl Finkel, who just passed away, was certainly an amazingly integral part of WoWo, particularly because he really was rarely at the radio station.
That's true, and he was a real visionary. He had this idea that with all of the technical things you had, he could look at radar any place in the nation and the world, for that matter. And he was, of course, a weather person in World War II. So he knew he could do this. And he proposed to become our station meteorologist, and that was a tough sell. But again, a visionary, Al Mitchell. And I'm pretty sure it was Al who saw that this could be a tremendous thing for us, because for a station other than television to have their own meteorologist, that was very costly.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out, and Earl became our weather person, and he was so good. I remember that blizzard of 78, maybe it was.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere in there. He had forecast that thing a day in advance. Nobody else. And in all fairness to the TV guys, they said there was a chance for a heavier storm, but Earl said this is going to be a blockbuster. He followed it all the way through and called it exactly. So he was very, very accurate. Very funny, though, too. He was a good personality and a showman. He used to get rolling, and he had a line, I love this. He'd throw it in there. He talked about the cumulus, the nimbus, the stratus, and e pluribus unum was coming our way. But that was Earl. And, of course, not only did he do WoWo, as you know in the history of it, many other stations. In fact, it used to blow my mind. Florida's very difficult to forecast because of, 180 miles either way, and you've got coasts.
Mm-hmm.
They can change so often.
Yeah.
But he did a station in Orlando and did it quite well.
You know, the thing I always liked about Earl was he was able to, you'd get him on the phone to do a live shot, and mm-hmm. he was able to listen to whatever it was, 30 or 45 seconds of the station before he went on the air. And just in that little amount of listening, he was able to pick up on what was going on and integrate what he was doing with the stations, so it sounded like he was there all day.
Exactly. And he would, as you were waiting, as you mentioned, not only listening on the air, he'd ask you some questions, about what had happened during the day and my having been associated with farming, what's bugging the farmers, so we could relate to it. Very talented, and boy, what a loss that was. He's just a great person. You were talking about the other day, the Ho-Ho Wo-Wo contest?
Yes.
I had run into a fellow down here. I do some things with my church, some emceeing and so forth for him. This guy came up to me and was a winter visitor, but he had been a policeman in one of the towns up there. I can't recall. Sharon seemed to think it was Muncie. I'm not sure. I think it was a smaller town. He said, I want to tell you a story about that Ho-Ho Wo-Wo. Said, I was a police officer back then, and one day, WoWo gave out this phone number. What we did, the premise, of course, we bought the list of payphones, and you'd have to answer that payphone and say, ho, ho, WoWo, to win a turkey or a ham. But he said, one day, they gave out that number, and at this one phone booth, four cars collided. It was a minor accident, but four people were on their way to that phone booth and hit each other. And their chief of police had to call our manager and say, please, can you do something about this? But that's about Ho-Ho-Wo-Wo. I mean, it was tremendous.
That was one of those contests that only Wo-Wo could do, of course.
Oh, right.
And
right.
I understand that the only reason that we stopped doing that contest, because it was used several times, was because of FCC regulations that you were not supposed to, I guess, record people without their permission.
That's
or
right.
Something.
Yeah. The ruling originally was a call-in line, if someone knows they're going to be on the line when they call in for those contests, you're fine, but if you're just ringing a payphone, which there hardly are any of anymore, that persons might not know, and because you went on the air immediately. If you didn't say, ho, ho, whoa, you didn't win it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one that went by the boards, but it was a great one. I wanted to tell you just a little thing about ratings, if I could. I think it may have been, in fact, even Chris Whitting, but I'm not sure. We had had a ratings book that was just unbelievable. 1 hour, and I say we, Bob more than me, or he was the magnet, we had a 1 hour that came in like 66%. And for folks that don't know, if you get double digits, it's amazing. To get that kind of a rating is unbelievable. And the program manager was going over that with us, and boy, I'm just static. I think that's great. And Bob is sitting there very, almost dejectedly, and you know, looking at the floor. And if it was Chris or Al or whoever, said, Bob, what's the matter? I just told you you got a 66 rating in this 1 hour. Bob says, yeah, but where's the other 34? And serious, he could not believe that there was someone not listening to it.
The most amazing thing is he would draw that kind of an audience decade after decade.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. He would give credit to everybody else, though. He would say, well, if you guys didn't do this and you didn't do that, but it was Bob Sievers. I mean, what a magnet. When that guy, well, obviously the tributes that came in after he passed away. He, I think, is in the Indiana Hall of Fame, Broadcasting Hall of Fame, I believe.
Yeah, I believe he is.
And I don't know how you go about it or what you do, but I would sure like to see somebody nominate Bob Chase because, boy, the longevity that guy's had.
Absolutely, and I also think it's just a complete atrocity that Nancy Lee and the Hilltoppers or Sam DeVincent are not in that Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. Because for people who don't know, they, in their time, headed a lot of the regional fairs and state fairs even. The name groups, they would be the introductory act for them, Nancy Lee and the Hilltoppers. They were fantastic.
Dugan, on the interview that we did with Larry Kenny here at historyofwowo.com, he shared a story about being pulled over with you by a Indiana State Trooper on the way back from a winter carnival. Maybe you can do a quick explanation of what his story is, but then we want to hear your version of that.
Well, I wanted to get back. We had done our thing up in Angola to Pocahontas State Park, and I had gone up with a WoWo bus or something. I needed to get back. I wanted to do some things with my family. This was on a Sunday afternoon. So Larry says, I'm going, and I said, well, great. You mind if I ride with you? He says, no, we'll get back in record time. I have this big new, I think it was a Buick, a big white car, beautiful car. So we took off, and what he said is accurate, in that we got stopped. He got stopped by state police. I was an innocent rider. And then he gave this policeman this line about he had to get me back to the station because I had to do the 7 o'clock news, which the guy said, okay, I'll give you a warning this time and go ahead. But then he walked back to the car and said, I'm going to be listening to see if he really does have news. So now I got to go back and do the 7 o'clock news. And he drops me at the station and goes home for the night. Thank you, Larry. And I go up and I tell the news person on duty at that point, I've got to do the news. I can't explain because it was only like 10 minutes before the hour. I said, I've got to do the news, and I'm referring to the 7 o'clock news. And the news person said, hey, that's great, and takes off. He thought I meant the rest of the night. He's gone. So, yeah, I did the 7 o'clock, I did the 8 o'clock, the 9 o'clock, and at that point you had to do up until midnight. And so I had to do the 7 through the midnight that night. That really did happen.
And meanwhile, Larry goes home.
Larry's home. He had a good time with his family. He went home to his wife. That's Larry. The last thing that I wanted to mention to you was modern era. Now, my modern era, when I had come back, the things that I thought were so funny, and they were, to Bob Sievers, when you're on the other side and you had guys, I didn't realize how this was when guys were feeding you this stuff. And there was a young man who I know and respect and have a great deal of admiration for, slipped me a few Mickeys along the way. One in particular, when I first had come back, because having been a news director, the first newscast of the day, they had me do. And then the news person, whoever that was working on from that point on.
Right.
I think it was like a 5 o'clock newscast.
Yeah.
So anyway, in the pile, this particular person brought me, and finally, you know, this story just in, and I believe it was from the Columbia City Police Department, said somebody had come into the police.
Actually, it was Cherubusco.
Cherubusco. Oh, you heard it. Cherubusco. And said that during the night, somebody had walked into the headquarters and stolen the toilet seat. And I'm thinking, what the heck kind of a story is this? There must be something more to it. You know, I hadn't seen it. You have to read it. And the kick line was, they are continuing the investigation, but for now they have nothing to go on. And then I realized I've been had.
I do remember that very well.
I'll bet you do. This same.
That was April Fool's Day, by the way.
That may have been, but the other one wasn't. Young gentleman came in and he said, Chris Roberts just called. And we did the music, no records or anything. It was cartridges back then. Yeah. Now, I guess it's all computerized now, but it was cartridges. And the story was that this particular record that I had coming up on the playlist had a problem that occasionally it misfired. It didn't play right. So he said, Chris had me re-record this and put it on this card. I don't even have it labeled yet. But he said, that's the one you want, next up. I said, okay, you sure? Yep, Chris said, make sure. And I should have known because Chris Roberts never got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I mean, back then, I guess he does a morning show now. Nonetheless, I put that thing in and introduced it, whatever it was, and started playing it. I'll never forget this one. It was the Blues Brothers and Rubber Biscuit. You remember hearing that one?
To be honest, I don't even remember that one.
Well, you did it. Can you imagine expecting something like Foreigner or REO Speedwagon or something, and Rubber Biscuit hits you about 5:15 in the morning? That was amazing. Those were good times, Randy, and thank you for doing that and giving me an appreciation of what Bob had to go through.
I seem to remember a morning man who conned one of his sidekicks into wrestling a 600-pound bear at the Sports Vacation and Boat Show.
You didn't get hurt, did you?
No, but I'll tell you, I don't believe I was ever more worn out in my life than after that bear was through with me.
I'll tell you, mine, of all the things, we did some crazy things in promotions. The craziest one I did one time, and never ride an elephant, whatever you do. I mean, you know, camel maybe, but don't ride an elephant, because those things. I was up on top of this thing, and it was in the parade, the Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Parade, and everything was fine until the elephant stepped in a hole.
Oh, no.
And I'm telling you, whoa, that was tough. You know, the elephant, the body goes, and you go with it, and then all of a sudden it stops. And that was not a pleasant time. And I said, you know, I can do a lot of things, and I have done a lot of things in the promos, but I don't ever want to ride an elephant.
I think you were kind of limping around after that, weren't you? Seriously.
Limping around. I also was singing in the choir, but that's another thing.
In the soprano section.
Yes, absolutely. But what a station. In closing, I always like to call it, and I do to this day, the grand old lady of radio.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was. And we had the privilege of working there. And as I think back upon it, I really mean that. I mean, whatever circumstances led us there, we had that privilege, and it was tremendous.
What do you think the real key, if you boil it all down, why do you think WoWo was such the dominant radio station that it was in its day?
Because I think we were honest on the air. We really strove all the time to be accurate in news and accurate on the things we put on the air. And anybody's going to make a mistake, but if we did make a mistake, we told the folks about it. And Westinghouse had a policy. If you made a mistake, and it was a big mistake, on a newscast, you didn't bury it in the 3 a.m. newscast the next day. You had to come back on the next day. You had to check and see how many times that story ran and run a corrected story in the same number of newscasts at approximately the same place where you put the other one. It's integrity. Doug Fisher, and he teaches an ethics journalism class at University of South Carolina, and we talk about that, how there's so much on immediacy, and we had immediacy too, but you still need to have facts and make sure, because you're dealing with people's lives. And I think that's one of the things. Another thing, Randy, I thought about the other day, we didn't have inside jokes. I mean, even when we were pulling fast ones on Bob or whatever, the audience always knew what we were doing. I mean, if it was a really kidding thing, they could see it coming, or we'd explain it afterwards. And today I hear a lot of inside private things. People laughing, and the audience has no idea what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always honest with the people, and we were always accessible. We did so many things out in the community.
I think that was an absolute key. And one of the things that, as the radio station's resources began to decline after Westinghouse sold it, that was kind of a shame that we were not able to do as many things in the community as had been done in the real glory days.
We kind of had to do it with smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Not trying to fool anybody, but we were just so stretched, we had to, you know, instead of having one of us go out to a fair or a community thing, we would call somebody on the phone and interview them. And that's not like being there.
Any other stories that come to mind? When you left WoWo, tell us about that a little bit.
Well, when I left WoWo, Sharon and I loved Florida, and now our family's here, primarily my one son's in South Carolina, but my other son's in Tampa. And we wanted to be in this area back again, or originally, so we decided it was time. And the funny thing was, we put our house up for sale, and we said, if it sells, we'll move, and if it doesn't, fine, no problem. And I had been out someplace far away speaking that night, and we always had a deal. If I got back into Fort Wayne after midnight, Jay had a cot where he used to take his morning naps, and I wouldn't go back home that night because I'd only get like an hour's sleep, so I'd just camp out there and then get back up in the morning. I had my razor and everything there, change of clothes and the like. So I'd been far away over in Ohio somewhere, and I got back in, and there was a note there, call Sharon regardless what time you get in. I thought, whoa, what happened? So I called home, and Sharon said, guess what? My house was sold. So I said, whoa, now we got to go.
This has been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you being so generous with your time. And I can just say, and you know this well, the time that you and I worked together was probably, I would say, the greatest time of my career. And it was
wonderful.
A tremendous learning experience, and you're just a great friend.
We had a really good time, and as you mentioned, we didn't have all the resources that were there before, but we sure got a heck of a lot of the resources we had. And we had good people again. I mean, you and Bob Chase was doing sports, and I think Jerry was doing the news at that point.
Yeah.
And Dave Russell had come in to do the farm.
Yeah.
And we just tried to do everything we could to carry on in the pattern that the other guys had done. But again, and I was the first to tell you this, you just can't replace Bob Sievers. I mean, I hear some of these football coaches going in now replacing legends, like whoever here in Florida has to replace Bobby Bowden. Whoa.
Yeah.
You can't do it. You can't replace him. There's no way. You just go in and try to pick up and do the very best you possibly can. And that's it. And friends, boy, we got friends going back many, many years. I'll run into folks from that whole area that will say, boy, I used to listen to Whoa, Whoa. I'd be freezing out in the barn listening to you guys. But it was true, and we really had a good time with it.
Well, Dugan, thank you very much for spending some time with us here at historyofwowo.com.
Well, thank you, and I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but it just so happened that I was fortunate enough to be there long enough, and they never did find the right place for me. Now, they did talk to me when I finally left about Bodie. His job was, he gave me a recommendation, too, and I was thinking seriously about that one. But that's about the only thing in the station I didn't do.
But how do you follow that legend?
You can't follow Bodie. I mean, they're all alike. You can't do it.
Thanks, Dugan.
Thank you, Randy. I appreciate it.